My name is Mary Lobson, and I'm the founder of Reese. Welcome to the Reese community. We're here to talk about innovation, best practice, and promising practice related to harm prevention. I am really excited to have with us today Kinyora Parham. She is the CEO of End Rape on Campus, also known as EROC. They're a national organization that works to end campus sexual violence by providing support for survivors, prevention through education, and policy reform. Kinyora is an active member of the Every Voice Coalition, Culture of Respect, and she's the co-founder of Student Rise International. So we're thrilled to have her here. We're excited to have you along with us as we talk about making change, shifting culture, and creating impact. Welcome to the Reese community. I'm very excited today to have Kinyora Parham with me. She is the executive director of End Rape on Campus. So welcome. It's very nice to see you again.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to see you. We talked a while ago and lots has been going on in the months since we have chatted. I'm going to just take 1 minute to kind of explain how I got connected to EROC. Mm-hmm. Lots have happened since that time. So like many, I watched The Hunting Ground when it came out in, I think I saw it in probably January of 2016. Mm-hmm. And that is the film about sexual violence on campus in the US. Mm-hmm. And it was such an emotional experience. As someone who's worked in the gender-based violence field for 30 years, it was a really impactful film. And after that, I reached out to Annie Andrea, who were in the film and really pivotal to the creation of the film, to see if they would come to Winnipeg. And we did a screening of The Hunting Ground. We did a launch at the bookstore of We Believe You. And so that was my first introduction really to End Rape on Campus and about the work that they had been doing. So that was 2016. Fast forward, 8 years later, a lot has happened in terms of the work that you've done, but also just in terms of the organization. It is kind of shifted and morphed, and you just said to me that you are kind of at this place of rebirth with respect to EROC as an organization. So tell me a little bit about tell me about your role and tell me about kind of what's happened. There's been some really exciting new board changes and those kinds of things. So tell me a little bit about what life at EROC has been like over this past while.
Yeah, so I actually came into End Rape on Campus back in 2018 and then became the interim now actual CEO of End Rape on Campus.
I stand corrected.
No worries. I'm still getting used to the title myself. We have gone through a lot of iterations, as you mentioned, and this kind of rebirth that I am now embracing is really due in part to back in 2020 during COVID, we were essentially acquired by Civic Nation, which then went into some restructuring back in 2023, so just last year. Mm-hmm. And so instead of sunsetting End Rape on Campus, I said, I will continue the legacy, continue to help sustain what Annie and Andrea have done because it's much needed. It's still needed. There's a lot more work that needs to be done on college campuses. And so what that meant for me was that I was going to have to take this rebirth, which I think in most part would be alone in some ways. So I am one of one full-time employee, but I have an amazing small but dedicated board of directors that are just trailblazing women in their own rights. And so right now we're in this process of really going bigger, going home, right? Because again, me being one of one, I want to rebuild a team that will be able to not only sustain our campus accountability mapping tool, but reinstate our student survivor caucus program, reinvigorate our speaker series, and really deepen our advocacy efforts. Like, I've still been doing some of that, you know, working on some from legislation, especially on the federal level, a little bit of state work as well, just to make sure that we're maintaining our consistency and that advocacy. But I need a team in order to help me sustain all of that. And so we are now launched, just as of yesterday, our $1 million campaign.
That is exciting. I saw the news and thought, oh, this is perfect timing that we have to chat about this. So I guess firstly, tell folks who, you know, they may or may not be familiar with EROC and the work, you know, you've just explained some of it, but talk a little bit about the campus accountability map and tool. Like, what is it?
Yeah. So our campus accountability map and tool really aims to empower students, survivors, and their communities with the ability to compare sexual assault statistics across different colleges and universities in the United States, including Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Mm-hmm. So right now we have about 1,700 colleges and universities listed on the map and tool. And really what it provides is insight as to how colleges and universities approach sexual assault. So there's about a few parameters. So there's the investigation policies, there's survivor support, there is even the statistical data that we are able to derive from the U.S. Department of Education's Campus and Safety Security website, which anyone has access to. But it really provides this in-depth, you know, what type of policies does this college have in comparison to this? What type of investigation model does this college or university have in comparison to that one? So it really just allows students and their parents or even researchers or anyone who's just looking for more information to have more of that informed information and data around how colleges and universities approach sexual assault. And so we're, you know, only a year out from our launch last year in January. But my hope, especially with our campaign, is that we're able to expand upon our map and tool. We want to hear from the voices of students themselves about what they would want to see on the map and tool, because really it's for them. Yeah. It's for student survivors. And so we want to make sure to continue that effort and listening to what students want and what that could potentially look like for the map and tool. That would really help to, you know, hold schools accountable for how they approach this issue.
Yeah. So you said you have about 1,700 schools on there. There are way more schools than that in the US. And I'm wondering, like, is it a tedious, like, one school by one school by one school?
Mm-hmm. So we had about 150 volunteers within 2 years that helped us to crowdsource the data that you see on the mapping tool.
Yeah,
we essentially would give them a number of schools and say, here is all the information we want you to find based off of the prompts that we've had, that we provided. So they literally would crowd through.
Wow.
And scour the pages and websites of colleges and universities, because there is no standardization of how this information is presented on each college campus website. So it's the volunteers that really did the grunt work of it all. And, you know, it's all public information too, that they're searching for, but they're the ones that are, you know, going through the pages, reading through PDFs, going through Google search just to find, you know, certain information in order to make it accessible and available on the mapping tool.
That's a lot. Like, that's a huge undertaking. That's a huge undertaking. So now you've launched your fundraising campaign, started officially yesterday, going to spring of 2025. So there's time. What will the funding do related to the accountability map?
Yeah. So related to the accountability map, so our essential plan is to not only add more schools to the map and tool, but also to update the current information, given that we're now under a new Title IX law. And also, we want to not only hear from students who would be using this tool, but we want to kind of create like a rating or ranking system that really would help to inform even campus leadership about how their community is rating or ranking them. So that way we can be in partnership and in lockstep with them to help create and shift how they approach campus sexual assault. So we're, some people would say, oh, you're putting colleges and universities like on the map and on blast. And it's like, yes. And while that could be true, we also want to partner with colleges and universities to help them move the needle, help them do better, not have to be every couple of years they're dealing with a new set of students that are protesting for the same things over and over again. But it's now more, how can you be proactive? How can you provide prevention in order to make this issue not only go away, but for your community writ large to just feel safe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I remember when we chatted last, we had talked about the efforts in Canada related to Our Turn and eventually Students for Consent Culture and the scorecard that was created that really outlined and looked at, you know, key components of sexual violence response on campus. So things like policy, you know, reporting pathways, processes, investigations, transparency, accountability, and those kinds of things. So would those be some of the things then that you would be looking at kind of in terms of developing a ranking like that, or kind of what, or do you know kind of what that might look like, or maybe it's too early to.
So we're still in the early phases of that right now, because we really want to have a wide range of perspectives of students, especially students who are coming from historically Black colleges, students who attend tribal and Hispanic serving institutions, even students who attend community colleges that often get left out of the conversation when it comes to this this issue, and even rural institutions, which happen to be a mixture of some of those institutions I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that we want to make sure that we're centering as part of that rating or ranking system that will allow students to know from even a cultural perspective, here's how a college may approach this issue. Or maybe it's from a faith or religious perspective or some sort of component there that a student would want to know about too. So we'll create it with them, with students, student survivors and advocates alike, in order to help shape what that could potentially look like. For me, I envision the map and tool to almost be up there like a U.S. News World Rank report. You know, I wanted to help set the standard for what and how colleges should, you know, provide and create in an educational environment that is not only attainable, but is free from violence. Mm-hmm. We know that violence may still happen, you know, every now and then, but at least having colleges being able to do something about it and doing it not only effectively, but also with culturally responsive ways, being survivor-centered and human-centered too at the end of the day.
Yeah. Last, about a year ago, I was in Sydney, Australia for a World Academic Summit. And at that time, the University of Sydney had just recently released its sexual violence numbers on campus. And so, you know, there's this chatter about, you know, should schools release their numbers and what does that mean if they have high numbers? And, you know, we believe that numbers are good, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where institutions show high numbers, that means that people are coming forward. That can be a signal of trust within an organization. It can be a signal that there are supports in place, that people feel empowered to be able to come forward. So those numbers for us are indicators of good things. And I think typically, or, you know, kind of historically, people have viewed, oh, well, if, you know, that just signals there's a problem on campus, an issue. But really, I think as we learn more, that shifts, and we can view the positive opportunity that comes with increased transparency and accountability. Absolutely. I guess I wonder, kind of in the work that you're doing so far, has there been interest from campuses in an institutions saying, oh, we love this and want to be a part of this? Or has there been any kind of reluctance to it, thinking, oh, shoot, you know, we're going to be called out?
For the most part, we have received a lot of great feedback. We have an error form. So if any, you know, campus leadership happens to find information that may be incorrect, they have the opportunity to help, you know, provide us with that information in order for us to correct it, because we don't want to have any misinformation on the map until we want to be as accurate as possible. And so we welcome that type of feedback. For the most part, we receive a lot of folks who are like individual staff members who want to do above and beyond that of what even Title IX is able to guide them in. And so if anything, they're coming to the map and tool very much with, you know, an open mind, definitely may have feedback here and then, but for the most part are just so happy to see not only some information that they may not even be aware of their own institution, but also be able to, you know, compare to another comparable university or college about like what they may or may not have and how they may be able to, you know, institute some of those efforts at their university. And the one thing that you had mentioned too around the numbers too, definitely, you know, the higher the numbers, we definitely agree with you on the same thing. For us, it is about, you know, if there are higher numbers, it means the campus is doing something right for students to be able to come forward and disclose. Even at the same time, we also say like the lower the numbers, it could mean a various number of factors that play a role into why that is. One, there may be inconsistency with the reporting that's happening under the disclosures that universities are supposed to do, especially under the Clery Act. And for those who will be listening to this, may be unfamiliar with the Clery Act, it essentially is a law in which colleges and universities and schools really for that matter are federally obligated to disclose their crime statistics of what occurred on their campuses. And so we essentially use some of that Clery data as part of our map and tool in order to be consistent across the board. And so our whole thing is to ensure that, you know, people who come to the map and tool are able to utilize it, not only to make their most informed decisions, whether they're a high school student also who's trying to think about college as that next step, but maybe even a grad student or a potential grad student, or even just a researcher. So it's really for anyone who's just looking for more information to help them make a more informed choice.
Mm-hmm. The thinking about what you said a few minutes ago, the, you know, the ability to, you know, have rankings or ratings, you know, when we look at, you know, the World University rankings and the rankings that are out there in schools, this issue of sexual violence doesn't show up anywhere on there. It can talk about learning outcomes, you know, it can talk about a number of different things, but gender equality, if it's even talked about, it's talked about more from a, what are the staffing ratios or the leadership ratios, and not thinking about the safety, the safety and well-being of the, you know, of the student community and the people who are involved in that institution. So it's certainly a gap in how, I guess, publicly anyway, to this point, schools are viewed and what they're ranked on. So it's an important piece, and will be interesting to see how the accountability map and tool can evolve over time to become, to fill that gap that we know currently exists.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
Absolutely. I think another thing too is what I think we also may have lost as part of the national discourse is that there are students who are coming in with trauma and are also coming into a new world in a way of being that, especially if they're living on campus, never had that type of opportunity. They're now apart from their families. They're living on campus for the first time. They're engaging in like peer-to-peer activities. There may be peer pressure happening. There's parties. Like, they're exposed to a whole new world of just, you know, things that they potentially imagined maybe while watching some movie or whatnot about college life or a documentary, but they're now able to make their own decisions and be a part of student groups and fraternities and sororities and be exposed to just different things that they probably didn't have access to in their communities in which they come from. And so sometimes I think what gets lost is they're coming in with some students, not all, some students are coming in with trauma. Some students, I'm right next to Georgia Power plant, so I don't know what they're doing.
Didn't sound good, but hopefully, okay.
That was weird. All right, let me start over. So students are coming in with their own trauma experiences at times, and then walking into a new environment in which they're, you know, they're either going to sometimes perpetuate the trauma in which they've experienced, or sometimes they are continually to experience the trauma by another person, a peer, maybe a staff member, faculty. And so I think sometimes while colleges and universities may think of orientation as like, here's what you should know about your city and in this college campus, it's also more about like, who are you as a person and who are you trying to become at the end of these like 4 years of college? How can we help shape you and be a part of your journey as a holistic student and not just about like, oh, here's a counseling center or a health center, if they even have one at times. But it's like, how can we holistically approach students in a way in which even if they're coming in with trauma, we can help them from day one. Mm-hmm. And so that way they're not, you know, being involved in this kind of cyclical pattern of violence that tends to happen, especially at the beginning of the year in the red zone. And so that is the most important and most critical time of year is to do that educational component. And so our hope is with the MAP and tooling with our programs, we're able to help shift what that red zone period would look like. We don't want to keep having a Reclaim Red Zones annual campaign that we typically do and spreading awareness of the red zone. We want that to be a thing of the past. And so in order for that to be that, we have to look at students as their holistic self, sense of self.
Well, and the map to some degree can help provide information about what the culture of that school may look like, right? Because I may need different things based on my experience and where I come from as a student that, you know, a smaller community college that has, you know, X type of resources might meet my needs better. And so considering some of those things that are now available through the MAP.
Yeah, especially from a cultural perspective too. Yeah. When we think about, like, for myself, I know I attended a women's college in Boston and it was just a predominantly white institution. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about students who are going to schools where majority of people don't look like them, it also provides us an opportunity to talk about what those demographics look like. So that way students are really walking away with, okay, here's what I know may exist in terms of student organizations that are culturally appropriate for what I'm looking for and looking to engage in. And so it provides, I would love for the MAP and tool to be able to provide students with that kind of holistic perspective that's just outside of, you know, yes, you can look at other college boards for, you know, the type of program, if their number one program is, that is great, have that. But we want to talk about like you as the student life side of things. That would also help to make that more informed decision as you're thinking about college or while you're in college, maybe you want to transfer, you know, so whatever what you're looking to do, we want to be able to make sure that we have all of that information readily available.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Student Survivor Caucus.
Yes.
So right now you're an Iraq of one. So tell me maybe if you want, you know, kind of either, you know, what it was and what you envision it to be again, or what you're working towards.
Absolutely. So our Student Survivor Caucus was essentially a network of students from across the United States who wanted to bring anti-sexual violence work to their campuses. And so they engaged in what we called like three pillars, which were like survivorship and wellness, sexual assault awareness and education, and social and political activism. And so we had three different pillars in which they would engage in. They would meet at least twice per month, learning from each other, from guest speakers that we would have coming in, share experiences, ideas, and develop an action plan that would be either at the campus level, local level, state level, and even national level. So we started in 2021 and had started with about 15 students. Our aim was 25, but we got 15. And then it grew to 50 in 2022. And so we saw, okay, there's this opportunity to create these kind of regional based students across the United States. However, then when 2023 came and we, you know, were under Civic Nation and they were restructuring, we had to essentially pause on our programs. And so I'm hoping to really bring back the Student Survivor Caucus because I feel like we had such momentum in just the first 2 years. But what I can say is our Student Survivor Caucus members are absolutely amazing, amazing students. In the first year, they essentially developed like what are the five core things a college should have on their campus as it relates to campus sexual assault. And then in the following year, they created what was a wellness journal that was created by survivors for survivors, which is still accessible on our website. And even one of our inaugural student representatives from the University of Kentucky now sits on the EROC board. So we're trying to create a pipeline of students who want to be involved in this work and want to be connected to this work even after they are part of the caucus. So it's an opportunity, I think, to really provide that education, provide them with the ability to engage with their peers from across the United States, including Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands, and to really just continue the efforts that is much needed work, because it really is the students who have always been at the forefront and are the backbone of this movement. And so we want to make sure that they're continuing to be equipped with the necessary knowledge in order to continue that that legacy.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge. You know, working in the campus space where there is that evolution of, you know, students come in, they're undergrads, they engage, they graduate, they move on. And so, you know, the fact that you've been able to have some success in keeping people, if you will, in the movement. But I think we also know that sexual violence is not an issue specific to higher education. It's happening in their workplace, in other organizations, in the community at large. And so the valuable opportunity of that learning, those students who are part of the caucus can take, you know, with them wherever they go and whatever work that they do, and still have that lens to then kind of move through the world and approach the issue, but perhaps in other spaces that they're involved. So that's a great opportunity. I know that we have historically had what we called a youth advisory board, which is a similar concept, and the ability to have co-creation with students and learning from them and thinking about, okay, what is important to them. And I, you know, this summer we had a couple of interns, and they were from different schools and in different places, and there was certainly some similarities in how they viewed the work and their experience on campuses, but there was also some distinct differences. And so that ability to, you know, broaden the people coming to the issue, break down some of those silos, move out of the echo chamber a lot of the time by engaging folks who maybe otherwise weren't part of the issue. So that's exciting.
Absolutely.
With the fundraising, have, so you have a goal of $1 million.
Yes.
So accountability map is high on that priority, bringing back the caucus. Are there other kind of tangible things that you see that money doing for Iraq?
Absolutely. So we also want to expand upon our culturally responsive and survivor-centered support services. So we have a number of students who often come out to us looking for either legal assistance or mental health support. And so we try to connect them with some of our partners in this work who are doing really great things. So we have a number of national partners, and we're working on a couple of local partnerships as well, in order for students to just know like who's in their backyard, because sometimes they're only looking for services on their campuses. And then they may Google us and come across us, and we're like, oh, we can provide you with a connection to, you know, partner A or partner B. And then of course we want to deepen and expand upon our advocacy efforts. And so as part with the map and tool also being a part of the fundraiser, the map and tool also be able to provide us with what are potential gaps and opportunities with regards to policies that we can help potentially institute, not only from the campus, but maybe even all the way through the federal level. Mm-hmm. And so we want to really be able to drive systemic change, especially on a policy level there. And so, but in order to do that, I need to build a team. And so we're looking for, you know, individual supporters. We're looking for, you know, a number of foundations and corporations, pretty much anyone who wants to help sponsor us help us to create that more equitable educational environment for all students.
If someone is watching or someone hears about this and they're interested in, you know, making a donation, being a sponsor, a partner, being involved in some way, where should they go to find out more?
So they can go to our website, nrapeoncampus.org, and right on our main navigation, they'll see Road to 1 Million. So they'll click right on there and then be able to make a donation today.
That's great. That's great. Well, certainly we wish you luck with that. We'll be watching to see how it goes. And, you know, certainly the work that you're doing is important, and the opportunity that funding will create for you is significant. So certainly wish you all the best with that. I appreciate you coming on and joining me today. It was good to catch up and see what's new at Iraq since we chatted last. Anything else you'd like to add or touch on before we sign off?
One thing I'll just say is for anyone who's listening and watching and is in support of not just student survivors, but survivors everywhere, thank you for believing in survivors. Often that is the first step. And oftentimes the one thing that most survivors need is just to be believed. So thank you for that work and opening that door of opportunity for students and survivors alike to feel seen and heard and believed.
Well, and that's a perfect note to end it on. So thank you again so much. I really appreciate you joining me today.
Thank you so much, Mary. I'm so happy to be here.
Great. Thank you.